Hi, I'm Gary Knoll. Nice to have you with us today. And we begin always with the latest from important institutions doing good work for things that are inexpensive and easy that we can do and to live a longer and healthier life. For example, sweet potatoes are a delicious food. They're just absolutely packed with vitamin C and other nutrients and minerals like calcium, magnesium, but also not just the sweet potato itself. And by the way, it's always best to bake your sweet potatoes at a lower temperature. A lot of people go to 450. I would go to 300 degrees. But before I put the sweet potato in the oven, I would take some, maybe a teaspoon of coconut oil, and I would massage the coconut oil over the sweet potato. Why? Because anything that cooks something at a high temperature can also change the nutrients inside. They can alter them and destroy them. Overboiling, charcoaling, deep frying certainly. These just literally wipe out the benefit of the good vitamins, minerals, and phytonutrients, enzymes. So the lower the temperature, the better it is. So if you're going to bake a sweet potato, then the best way of doing it is to take a little coconut oil, massage it all over the skin. Why is that? Because there's three oils that are very heat resistant, and those are the oils you should use in doing your primary cooking. Always put your more sensitive oils like olive oil in near the end of the cooking process so their nutrients are not adversely affected. Now, when you really want to get that, let's say, sweet potato done without destroying its nutrients, you can cook it over a longer period of time in the baking, let's say 250 degrees, that really is not going to neutralize a lot of the nutrients, or you can steam them. And what I do is I generally cut the sweet potato into pieces, and then I cover that in coconut oil, and I steam them in a wok. Doesn't take long, and that really protects all the nutrients. And then you got something that's really good for you. The beta carotenes are good. It helps your skin. It helps your hair. It gives you a nice source of calcium, but also the leaves, the leaves on the vine are used to make more of the B complex available and more of the vitamins available. Now, we know that these are water-soluble vitamins and they are needed, and those are in the roots and the leaves. And there's been limited information about how these vitamins are actually distributed in plants. And so they did this study and it showed that, use the mature young leaves of sweet potatoes. They can provide significant amounts of vitamin B6 and other essential vitamins. And that's what this study showed. Something that simple, that easy to get and grow your own. It's a vine-growing plant. And you got the buds and you got the root vegetables. And you should have those every day in your diet. And again, you can make a nice sauce to put over them. Or this is just an extra. I take, let's say, yesterday I did it. I took some olives and I diced up the olives and threw them into a blender. And then I threw three types of oil in. I threw some organic extra virgin olive oil. I also put in there some walnut oil. And the walnut oil came when I got a jar of walnut butter, organic, raw walnut butter. And when you open up the lid, you'll see there's probably a quarter inch to a half inch of oil. And that's the oil that really helps your heart. It's great for you. Reduces the risk of stroke as well. So I put that oil in there. And I also put some almond oil in. And finally, a little coconut oil. Actually, I had four. And then I took out of the fridge, I had some fresh strawberries, so I took the ends off the strawberries, cut them off, washed them down, and I agitate, meaning I take the, a lot of people don't realize this, but when you take a strawberry, at the end you'll see those little green leaves. Always cut those off. Why? Because if you don't, and those are grown in the soil, and it's organic, then every time the irrigation line hits and it gets water, it's going to splash the dirt up onto that, and that dirt can contain, well, salmonella and a lot of other items that you don't want in the way of bacteria. And So you just take the strawberry, cut the end off, and then spray the strawberries or any berry with your natural plant-based detergent, and then agitate it in water. Rinse it, agitate it in water, rinse it three times. That way it's really clean. Because every year, believe it or not, we have several hundred million cases of food poisoning in the United States. A lot of it comes from animal products that are contaminated, and especially most contaminated would be your ground beef. Because in the grinding process, you're allowing a lot of bacteria to mix, and that's not good. And then a lot of people don't realize how contaminated meat products are, and even dairy products for that matter, because you're not inside that processing plant and you don't know if it's good or not. And then you see that they don't always heat things to high temperature. So that's why people are told to cook something thoroughly. But in the process of cooking, here's the bad part. With meat, you create a chemical reaction called heterocyclic amines. They're cancer-causing. They're very pro-inflammation. So every time you have a hamburger, a hot dog, a steak, you're eating something that is going to cause inflammation, absolutely in every single time. And if you eat something that's less well-cooked, oh, give me that steak rare, give me a bloody steak, then you risk really being irresponsible because the contaminants are in the blood. So one more reason, if you choose or not choose, to become a vegan in that respect. In any case, so back to the strawberries. So I've washed the strawberries, and they're organic, and I threw them into the blender. And then I put a little tarragon in and fennel, and I use fresh fennel. You know, I get the plant and dice it up, and I throw it in the blender. And then a little pepper. Cayenne pepper, and then I blend it. And then what happens is I take a little strainer, I put it over a little jar, and I pour the liquefied material, and all the fibrous material is stopped. It's there. I can use that for anything else I want, including the base of vegetable soup or stew. But now I've got my reduction. So I have now whatever amount I want. You know, you put more something in if you want more. But I've got what is about a 3-ounce small container, and I have about 20 of them. I have a mint that I'm going to put on a dish, and it's a mint liquid. You know, I got fresh mint, did the same thing, blended it, then put it in the strainer, and then you got the liquid. Now, I can spritz that mint over a salad. In fact, yesterday I took pomegranates, which are in season, and I shucked the pomegranates. I mean, you open it up and you break off all of the little orbs and you put them in a salad. And it really changes because now you got a little sweet and crunchy taste to your salad. Then you put different microgreens in. You get some that are a little tart and sharp in taste and some that are softer, more mild, like a sunflower sprout, an alfalfa sprout, a mung bean sprout, and then I spritz the salad dressing on. So I make my own salad dressing. You could too. And it's generally good for about a week and a half, maybe two. And some I can put lemon in, and it changes the taste. That's how I don't put salt on things, because I don't have to. Lemon and lime together taste like salt, but no sodium. So that's how you can make yourself a really nice dish where you don't overcook it, steam it. The steaming process, once you've covered it in an oil, gives you a perfect, easily digested food that's not harmful, that doesn't create acrylamides, which is the browning process. That's why we are a nation that loves crunchy and salty. Potato chips, french fries, pretzels, these things are not good for you. They really are pro-inflammatory. But if you have a food dehydrator, which I suggest you do, they're not expensive, Then you could cut those potatoes, and I prefer purple potatoes because they're really loaded in nutrition, a lot of vitamin A, beta carotene, and calcium and magnesium. So I thinly slice, and you can buy a little thin slicer, and you slice up your potatoes, and you put them on one of the little trays, put it in, put it at 112 degrees. Now, anything under 115 to 120 degrees, it's still considered raw. All the nutrients are intact. And so you put it in at night, in the morning, you take it, open the door, and now you get yourself your potatoes. Instead of having a potato chip loaded with trans fats and lots of sodium and brown, so you got acrylamides, which can cause inflammation, now you got something that's healthy, still raw, but it tastes just like and mouthfeels like a potato chip. And then you can put whatever seasonings you want on it. You want Cajun, whatever. So I'm just saying we can be a lot more creative and maintain a much healthier diet and still have some of the other junk food pleasures of the way something smells or tastes and feels in the mouth, but it's all healthy. You could do the same thing with the pizza. Over the weekend, I had some friends drop by for the afternoon, and one of them says, Gary, why don't you ever have a pizza? I said, I can make you a pizza. Really? From scratch? Not go buy something? It's frozen? I won't take any time. So they came in the kitchen and watched how I made from scratch using coconut flour and brown rice flour and quinoa flour and some egg replacer. It's comes from a different root, cassava root, and blended that up and added an oil and solidified it and put it into a dehydrator. Well, lo and behold, in about 2 hours to 3 hours, I started this early, I had a crust. And then you put on, you can make fresh tomato sauce. Easy. You take your tomatoes, like Roma tomatoes, and you dip them in boiling water just for about 30 seconds, and then that means the skin can come right off. And then you puree the rest of the tomato in, let's say, whatever seasonings you like. Oregano, of course, is the most common seasoning, but I like to use some blends together. And so I made a sauce, and then I had some baked tofu, and I thinly sliced that. And then I had tempeh, a bacon tempeh, and so I thinly sliced the tempeh, which is great for people who want something that tastes like meat but isn't. And I made that as if it were pepperoni. And then I put in some thinly sliced shiitake mushrooms and even chopped up some lion's mane mushroom. And then put some olive oil on it and then heated it all up in the dehydrator. And then took it out, and they said it tasted great. Oh, by the way, I put a vegan cheese on it, which is also made from coconut. And they couldn't tell the difference. Does it take a little time? Yeah, it takes a little time. But if you're enjoying something with your friends, and it's just part of the whole social context of enjoying something. So you see, whether it's potato chips or pizzas or hamburgers, you can make anything that's a real junk food, but you can make it a healthy food. That's what I did when I was working in the school system to supply healthy meals for students. I would create the recipes and then go into a school and see how the kids liked it. And as long as you got the right seasonings, as long as it has the right mouthfeel, they'll love it. I mean, I'm sure many of you have tried the dairy-free ice creams, right? And the smoother ones you get, and that would be with cashews, cashew oil. And blended cashews have the same kind of rich, creamy feel in the mouth as does a regular milk and cream, but it's non-dairy. And you can also throw in some probiotics, and you can't taste them, but they're in there. So where a normal yogurt might give you 1,000, which is a tiny amount of probiotics, you could put 100 billion, yeah, 100 billion probiotics in one little homemade yogurt. So you can do a lot of things if you want to. Go to GaryNall.com also, and you can see some of the cookbooks and take some recipes. Also, every week, we give free recipes out on our newsletter to show people how to make a transition. Now, not everybody needs a transition. Not everybody wants something that tastes like meat. They don't want meat. And that's fine, too. So let's continue here. So we've got, we're making ourselves some sweet potatoes and we're using the leaves. And this is what this showed, that it was very rich in nutrients. Now, another one is about strawberries and blueberries can cut your heart attack risk in women. This is from the University of East Anglia in the United Kingdom. Eating three or more servings of blueberries or strawberries per week can help women reduce the risk of a heart attack by almost 30%. That's a big deal. This is also corroborated with a study at Harvard School of Public Health. These berries, blueberries and strawberries, contain high levels of a bioactive compound called antho, A-N-T-H-O, cyanidins, C-Y-A-N-I-N-S. And there's different types of these cyanidins. There's the cyanidins you find in grapes, proanthocyanidins, then the anthocyanidins you find in all the other berries. And these are a subgroup of the flavonoids. And the flavonoids are what you get when you have a good bunch of fruits and vegetables in the diet. This was published in the peer-reviewed journal Circulation, the Journal of the American Heart Association. So how do you get all those blueberries and strawberries into you in enough quantity to be a functional food, meaning function to help prevent disease and to help your arteries dilate? Otherwise, they build up plaque and provide other risk factors if you're eating the standard American diet. Well, this was a part of the nurses' health study, and the nurses completed questionnaires of their diet over 18 years. And then they looked at how many people who were eating lots of blueberries and strawberries had, wow, a 32% reduced risk of having a heart attack compared to women who ate the least amount of fruits and vegetables. That's a big deal. So what I do is I will take the blueberries and wash them, of course, and then I blend them. By putting them in a blender, I can then pour them like a puree over a hot cereal, quinoa, amaranth, steel-cut oatmeal, and I blend it in and roll it in. And that way you get a lot of it, and it's all digested, and it's a very soft fiber and really cleanses the intestines. So strawberries and blueberries, and I suggest you have maybe 3 days a week, and you can lower your risk of heart disease. And by the way, from the University of Turku, which is in Finland, a mother's health and diet during pregnancy can impact a child's later neurodevelopment. Maternal gestational diabetes mellitus may have unfavorable effects upon neurodevelopment of two-year-old children. On the other hand, a mother's healthy, comprehensive plant-based diet supports the child's neurodevelopment. That's according to the University of Turku. So that's one of the reasons I have said for a long time that before you have an intentional pregnancy, do a one-year detoxification, both the man and woman. This way, you're getting rid of defective cells, you're really rejuvenating your reproductive system, you're creating the healthiest possible sperm. Everything is based upon what you enter that process with. And the average American is entering it very toxic, even without being aware of it. So if you want a healthier mental development in your child with less inflammation, especially in the brain, then the mother's metabolism is important, that it be well-balanced, clean, exercising, taking the essential fatty acids, all that's a part of it. And from the University College London, midlife, moderate and vigorous physical activity levels associated with brain power. Your brain is simply healthier. This was published in the Journal of Epidemiology and Community Health. So the intensity levels are important for having good mental planning, organization skills. So 17 minutes of light to intense exercise a day does it. All right? There's a new study from the National Institutes of Health about vitamin D deficiency being associated with endothelial dysfunction. Researchers from the National Institutes of Health have found that when you don't have enough vitamin D, you're going to end up with damaged endothelial dysfunction, and that increases all types of problems. I won't go into the science, but it's type 1 interferon gene expression was looked at, and you don't want this. So you want healthy arteries. Therefore, having beet juice and pomegranates or pomegranate concentrate helps create healthier endothelium. Vitamin C and quercetin also help create healthier endothelium. Just one of these important things we don't think about, but we should, because the body has endothelial repair mechanisms. And how do we know that? Because years ago, a long time ago, over 30 years ago, a cardiologist was the first in the United States to take all the common conditions we have to put stents in and coronary bypass and cutting out arteries that are clogged, etc., and putting people on medications. His name was Dr. Dean Ornish. And I went down to film him, interview him, and I was there where he had people exercising, eating a healthy plant-based diet, and de-stressing exercises. He reversed every condition imaginable, every condition. Now, just recently, I filmed him where he had 9 people who had to have heart transplants. The heart was so damaged, it couldn't be repaired. And yet, he repaired every single one of them. Not one of those 9 had to have a heart transplant. You could see that in the documentary I made called Curing the Incurable. Well, so just imagine if you have a healthy plant-based diet and all the healthy oils, flaxseed oil, hemp oil, olive oil, coconut oil, then you're also helping the endothelium and you're helping the heart. Just a simple way that we can prevent heart attacks and strokes and live a longer life. We're going to take a break, and just remember this, that every day, if you want to find out what's really happening with honest reporting from some of the finest investigative journalists, professors, philosophers, activists, go to prn.live. From Richard Wolff in economics to a hearing from Black Agenda Report, the real voices who are not going to be manipulated and played, who don't align automatically with something and then cherry pick what makes their truths true, but people look for universal truths. If we care about children, we should. And we care about minorities, and we should, then why haven't we done a single thing to help the minorities and the children starving to death in the genocide in Yemen or in other countries where minerals are being exploited? Our host, our producers, focus on those issues that you will not see in the mainstream media. Or if you do see anything mentioned in the mainstream media, it's always manipulated. It's propaganda and biased. Ours is not. PRN.live, and we are the number one voice for the true progressives in this country. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Welcome back, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Today, I'm going to begin with a couple questions and see, and these were from people in the audience, but I've just rearranged them so it makes a little more sense for the audience. One has to do with someone who had listened to a program about a year ago, and I was talking about what happens when we bring our ethical or spiritual or moral values that are universal, not local, not our own, because a lot of people can feel very moral and very self-righteous about an issue and be completely wrong. And look at all the people who believe that, you know, you were bad and you were an evil and you, like Don Lemon at CNN, you shouldn't be allowed in the hospital if you've got an illness because you didn't get vaccinated. I mean, wow, that tells you all you have to know about someone as far as their level of empathy for the other. And so I was talking about what it means to be the other. Have you ever imagined what it would be like to wake up in a shelter or wake up sleeping under a bridge, or as I found thousands in 16,000, by the way, homeless vets living over in the area of East Titusville. It's over near Orlando, Cape Canaveral, that area. And they had no one in the general area looking out for them. In fact, here's the interesting part. There was a piece of property that someone had donated to keep vacant, meaning it was just woods, a couple acres. And out of knowing the vets could have a place to at least put up their little camps. But all the neighbors didn't like it. And when I asked the neighbors, have you ever served in the military? And have you ever been homeless? Do you know what it's like not to have a support system and to have been betrayed by your government? Then the doors get slammed in your face and you realize what you're dealing with. So how likely is it that that person is going to vote for the right candidate for anything or support the right side of anything if they can't support what it is to acknowledge a human being just like yourself, but the difference is opportunity. They are in a position where they don't have resources and they're on the downside of an issue. You're on the upside of an issue. And then I asked the larger question, what choices would you have made different in life if you had to make them based upon a spiritual value? I'm not talking about religion now. I'm talking about spiritual value, meaning high-level ethics, honesty, and honoring all life. Well, then you wouldn't be a racist, and you wouldn't be someone who's misogynist, and you wouldn't be any of the current woke epithets. You'd just be a human being who cares. And then you try to put at some level that caring into action. So the issue was, how is it that we can call ourselves a nation that cares? And indeed, many people do. But overall, our government doesn't care because we don't help those who are in most need of help and never help them in a way that really helps them. And that leads to the second person who wrote in. And this dealt with the people concerning equity versus equality. And I had said there's a big difference. We should all have opportunity in anything or anyone, any institution, government or private, that interferes in a person's ability to at least have a chance at something, to be included, then that should be challenged. But the fact that we all may want something doesn't mean that we are all deserving of it, if it's also based upon our own meritocracy, our own sense of priorities and discipline and commitment and higher ideals. But the way the system is now, and it's entirely slanting in this direction, if you don't like math, just say, instead of saying, I just don't like it, maybe I'm not smart. Maybe I am smart, but I'm lazy. Maybe I'm not smart and lazy. That's a deadly combination. And a lot of people are like that. So now call it racist, and then nobody will demand that you take math. In fact, you'll get an A in math, even if you never attend a math class, because you don't have to attend classes. You don't have to prove that you can learn something. No longer institutions, therefore, critical thinking and the tools to become a critical thinker, an independent thinker, and look for the truth, the real truth, not just a personal truth, because you can have a lot of personal truths. The Nazis had personal truth. It was just wrong. Hitler, Stalin, the people who want to get rid of all fossil fuel immediately without thinking, okay, and of course we do have something to take its place that is non-polluting and available right now, right? No. But you're allowing millions of people to suffer because you haven't had a segue from point A, something we don't want to rely upon, to segue over to B, where we've created something that will take its place, but allowing a transition that respects the suffering of those. No. So then you double down on being self-righteous and don't care about the people, and then you blame them. Maybe all whites are diseases. Well, D'Angelo's book certainly highlights that. So you want to embrace that. And there are people who embrace Mein Kampf, and I consider the outcome that could be not with the concentration camps, but making a person based upon their ethnicity the enemy. Now, we have no choice of how we're born, who our parents are, and what our skin color will be. But are we all just skin colors? It doesn't matter what our character, our morals are. Nothing else matters. Just that. Exactly right, Gary. And if you doubt me, get in the face of a young 17-year-old who believes that they're smarter than anyone at that university or any of the books. They're smarter than Immanuel Kant. They're smarter than Spinoza. They're smarter than Eurydicles. And they couldn't spell Eurydicles. They don't know anything about anything. They're functional idiots. And yet they control America today because they control what people buy. And because they control what people buy, that gives them an enormous amount of pressure. So now everybody's got to be woke in virtue shaming. Even though, God, man, she is such a pathetic soul, in my opinion. Greta Thunberg. At one time I said, what she is saying is correct, but who's behind her and why she's saying it is open to challenge. And now she's a Davo. She's the Davos person. 20 years old now, no longer a kid. But my God, when all the people were asking legitimate questions about how is it that you can be here where 1,000 private jets got here, creating a larger global footprint in carbon emissions than whole countries do in their daily lives, how is that possible? Isn't there hypocrisy here? Just laughed. Okay, remember that. So when I told you that I've never seen her ask a question that she didn't know the answer to, meaning coached when she had to answer extemporaneously, clueless. But then again, what did it matter? What does Joe Grogan matter? Joe, I'm asking you, buddy, what the hell is your purpose? I'm just interested. Is it money, $100 million contracts? Go on there and smoke your cigars and talk with people, some interesting, some not? What the hell's with your audience? You got 12 million people, more or less. When did you take them out to protest Wikipedia and ask them, walk away from this rag, walk away from these biased people who, when they write something about you, they won't allow it to be changed? If you had all your people walk away from it and then protest it and write letters to Congress to have the Wikimedia Foundation's privileged status taken away, then it would be sued into oblivion and cease to exist, which it should cease to exist because its existence is purely proprietary and weaponized. When did you go on a strike and ask your audience to go on a strike to protest our genocide in Yemen, or the fact that Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton and Gloria Nuland, all the others who were responsible for the destruction of Libya, to be held accountable? But you haven't. So you may be a tough guy, I'm sure you are, but man, I'm looking at you right now like Lonesome Dove in Facing the Crowd with Andy Griffin. Having a big audience that stays passive but supportive means what? Think about that. And then ask yourself, you got all this power, and how exactly are you using it? And why don't you challenge it? Why don't you put it up there and say, let's just see whether or not these 12 million people are capable of responding to all the injustices that I share and the people I interview on this program. That's legitimate. You haven't done that yet. But in America, we're so competitive, we don't look at how a person got successful or what their message is. We just care that they're successful. All the effort in America goes to the winner, never to the loser. And anyone who can't outcompete you is considered a loser. And we thrive on punishing people for being losers. Who's punished the most in America today? Is it the people in Washington? None of them. How about Wall Street? None of them. Big Pharma? None of them. Anyone in the royal family? Nope. Embarrassed by these twits, but no damage. Okay. So those who are elite or powerful in the professional class, none of them. When was the last time the professional class went on strike to change everything that's wrong with the deadly aspects of medicine? Never happened. Why not? Because they're not practicing medicine. They're practicing disease capitalism. Boy, there's a big difference. There's no money in preventing a disease, and there's no money in keeping people healthy and when they die. But there's a lot of money to be made pretending that your efforts are the best real science. No, they're not, and every scientific study shows. You can't reproduce your results in 66% of the peer-reviewed journals. But it's the pretense, the facade. It's the illusion that if you're powerful, you're smarter than everybody else. Not true. And yet we only thrive through illusion, never reality. And so the people that trusted you, that trusted the talk show host, that trusted people making million-dollar contracts, that you certainly had the staff and the wherewithal to tell us the truth. You can at least do that, can't you? Can you ever in your goddamn life be honest about anything? And the answer is, why should I? Why should I lose my contract? Why should I have to tell the full truth when the full truth would alienate my base and alienate my political position? Sound familiar? New York Times, Wall Street Journal, and every other publication in the United States, every radio and talk show, including on Pacifica? What the hell do you fear by telling the truth? And can you even find the truth through the thickness, the fog of bias? The answer is no. You didn't do it before. You haven't had to pay a price for being wrong about Vietnam and the Korean War and plastics and glyphosate or anything else. You just pay a fine and go on. How about that? So when people ask me a question, I want to throw it back at you. How is it that we're living such an illusion where the people in most pain and most suffering today are the middle class, who are not policymakers, not opinion leaders, are not in any position of power, and even those who've worked very hard to gain some seniority, now your seniority is a weapon pushed into your heart. Why? Because historically, the longer you work, the better you were. In a company, you develop seniority. That means you made more money, you had longer vacation time, you had more benefits, better bonus. But you were also the person who got some pleasure in the fact that you were doing your job right and people were coming to you and you were the go-to person. Go to Karen. Karen knows exactly how to do that. Bob over there, he's the best at it. He's been here 30 years. Now guess who's getting fired first and hired last? Those with seniority. So the very meritocracy that we said was important is not. Why should I hire you here, 55 years old, you're old, and probably got a crusty brain, and you're making $180,000 a year, and you got 6 weeks vacation, and blah, 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 when I can hire a guy out of Taiwan who is 26 years old, has got a PhD in engineering, and is willing to work with no benefits, and that's who I'm going to hire at $40,000 a year. That saves me over $120,000 over what I'm paying you, and he won't take any vacation time. Why would you do that? That's just inhumane. Show me anywhere in any corporate interest where being humane or spiritual, ethical or moral, honest or transparent is something that guides the corporate interest. It doesn't anywhere or in any institution for that matter, including most religious institutions. I see. So we've been betrayed, yes. Willingly, most often, but also conditioning and propaganda. It plays a big role in what you'll accept or what you reject. And by the time you realize someone led you into the quicksand and then asked you to put some bricks around your ankles, and you did so, and they threw you a pizza or a coupon from Walmart, and you thought you were on the best end of that, you weren't, and you aren't. And all those friends were walking the red carpet, I've counseled over 3,500 celebrities. They're no more positive about life or no more able to understand the transitions life than anyone else. It's all a facade. But they dress theirs up. They got a lot of lipstick on that pig. Doesn't mean you should be kissing it. So we've made all the wrong things the right things to covet. And so who profits? The people who exploit our debt. So when we can't afford something, they profit. Hundreds of billions of dollars are made off when you get sick, but not when you stay well. Could we have universal health care? Of course we could have universal health care and save $1.7 trillion a year. I've done the math. I did the study. I put it out there, and not a single person responded to it. I sent it to every member of Congress. Not a single person responded because they're getting money put into their pockets. They're getting influence and helping it get reelected. You know it. I know it. And just look at who we voted for president. And never once could an ethical, spiritual person be elected to anything in this country, not even to head a church. That's how bad it's become. Why can't we be honest about anything to challenge these issues to go forward? That's my question to you. I'd like to hear your answer. These are the questions I get asked. And I just did a 30-minute extemporaneous discussion on spirituality this morning. And that what I do early in the morning that's filmed, and it goes out to Rumble, it goes to Odyssey and Gary Knoll's YouTube and Twitter. I don't know who puts it up there. I've never had an account on Twitter, but it's up there. And it's on prn.live. Scroll down to show notes and you'll see it. And it tells about why we have a fear, abhorrence of making spiritual decisions. Because if we had to make decisions based upon spirituality, almost all of our decisions would be different. At the corporate level, at the government level, at the personal level, at the group level. Why are we so terrified of what it is to be an ethical human being? That's a question. 888-874-4888 is our talkback number. I'd like to hear from you. So now we're going to go show you two back-to-back debates at Oxford University. And I like watching these. I've watched these as long as I've been around, that they've been doing them, because you get pro and con on different issues, and the assembly has a chance to vote on it. And they don't censor you, even if the rest of the public or the media is. Here are two on wokeism. Let's go to the first one, and then right after that, the second one, then you can call in and share your points of view on that as well. 888-874-4888.
And if you're not persuaded to vote for the proposition tonight by that speech by James, I don't know what will persuade you. You will not know this, but I was supposed to be the first non-student speaker for the proposition. I've now been the fourth, which means that I now have to thank all the previous speakers for making my best points for me. And I find that the main reason now that I have left to be in support of the motion is that I am so tired of talking about woke culture. That's why it's gone too far, more than anything else. And I thank the other speakers for making the points for me, because it means I don't have to reiterate the point that no, free speech is not some right-wing reframing of whatever. It's the foundation of Western civilization. Upon this civilization is built, and the Enlightenment values that led to it. I don't have to make the point that has been made by far better people in the past, that the only way to deal with the problem of racism is to treat people on the content of their character and nothing else. And the fact that woke culture seeks to overturn that is a new form of racism that we must all oppose. It means also I will not use this opportunity to say I told you so, as someone who spent the last 5 years warning people in the West that if we continue to erode our culture, if we continue to undermine our confidence in Western values, that our enemies like Vladimir Putin, will seek to capitalize on it. I will not make any of those points tonight at all. Instead, I am not going to talk to those of you who already agree with me, which I imagine is most of you. I'm not going to talk to you because I imagine after everything you've heard tonight, you're going to vote for the proposition. I'm going to confess I will take your vote for granted. Tonight, I am the Labour Party and you are the Red Wall. Now, I want to talk to those of you who are woke and who are open to rational argument. A small minority, I accept. Because one of the tenets of wokeness is, of course, that your feelings matter more than the truth. But I believe in you. I believe there are those of you here who are woke, who are open to rational arguments, so let me make one. We are told that your generation cares more than any other about one issue in particular, and that issue is climate change. We're told that many of you suffer from climate anxiety. You wish to save the planet. And for tonight, and tonight only, I will join you. I will join you in worshiping at the feet of St. Greta of climate change. Let us all accept right here, right now, that we are living through a climate emergency and our stocks of polar bears are running extremely low. I join you in this view. I truly do. Now, what are we to do about this huge problem facing humanity? What can we in Britain do? We can only do one thing. You know why? This country is responsible for 2% of global carbon emissions, which means that if Britain was to sink into the sea right now, it would make absolutely no difference to the issue of climate change. You know why? Because the future of the climate is going to be decided in Asia and in Latin America by poor people who couldn't give a shit about saving the planet. No, thank you.
One
No, thank you. It's going to be decided by poor people in Asia and Latin America who don't care about saving the planet. You know why? Because they're poor. Because they're poor. I come from Russia, which is not a poor country, it's a middle-income country. 20% of households in Russia do not have an indoor toilet. What they have is an outdoor toilet. And I don't mean one of those nice port-a-loos that we get here. I don't even mean a Glastonbury port-a-loo. I mean a wooden shack with a hole in the ground that holds a collected fermented memory of the last 10,000 visits. How many of you are going to go home tonight and say, let's rip out our bathroom and erect a Siberian shithouse in the back? 120 million people in China do not have enough food. I don't mean that they don't get dessert. I mean they suffer from malnutrition. That means that their immune system is breaking down because they don't have enough food. You're not going to get them to stay poor. Imagine you're Xi Jinping, the leader of China. When you were 10 years old, there was a revolution, a cultural revolution in your country, and people came and they put your father in prison. Your mother had to denounce him. Your sister killed herself. And you, no longer enjoying the protection of your formerly powerful father, were sent to a village where you lived in a cave house. And here you are, decades later. You have clawed your way up the bloody and greasy pole of Chinese politics to be the undisputed supreme leader of the very Communist Party that destroyed your family. And you know that the main thing you have to do to survive and to stay in power is to deliver the one thing that the people of China want: prosperity, economic growth. Where do you think climate change ranks on Xi Jinping's list of priorities? A third of all children who live in extreme poverty in the world live in India. That means they are starving and dying of preventable disease. Now, about 15 months ago, my wife got pregnant. Not me, because we're old school. And for 9 months, we talked about what our boy would look like, what he might do when he grows up. We looked at baby scans and videos on YouTube about what the fetus looks like at 9 months and 12 months and 20 months. And eventually he was born. And he is this cute little bundle of joy. He's cuter than about 80% of puppies, right? Now, if you said to me that I had a choice, either my son had a serious risk of starving or dying from a preventable disease in the next year, or I could press a button and he would live. He would go to school. He would bring his first girlfriend home. He'd go to university and graduate and become a woke idiot. And then he'd get a job and get married and have children and become a man. But all I have to do is press this button, and for every day of my son's life, a giant plume of CO2 is going to get released into the atmosphere. Now, you're all very young, and most of you are not parents. Let me tell you something. There is not a parent in the world who would not smash that button so hard their hand bled. You are not going to get these people to stay poor. You're not even going to get them to not want to be richer. And so, I put it to you, ladies and gentlemen, there is only one thing we can do in this country to stop climate change, and that is to make scientific and technological breakthroughs that will create the clean energy that is not only clean, but also cheap. And the, no, thank you. And the only, I want everyone to get home on time today, which is not going to happen. And the only thing that wokeness has to offer in exchange is to brainwash bright young minds like you to believe that you are victims, to believe that you have no agency, to believe that what you must do to improve the world is to complain, is to protest, is to throw soup on paintings. And we on this side of the house are not on this side of the house because we do not wish to improve the world. We sit on this side of the house because we know that the way to improve the world is to work, is to create, it is to build. And the problem with woke culture is that it's trained too many young minds like yours to forget about that. Thank you very much.
Did cite.
Heard one perspective. You could agree or disagree with what he had to say. But we need to have these debates on every college campus in America, whether it's a state college or a private university. And we're not having it. To the contrary, the woke doesn't want anyone who opposes their position, no matter how accurate the person may be, to have any forum. We want to see these people gone. If you disagree with us, gone. Let's put them up on Wikipedia and destroy their reputations, everything they've lived for. And then you have other people. Here's the second person. We're going to say goodbye now to WBAI because I don't want to interrupt his little speech. But I am going to come back and say hello to Joe from Queens, David from Brooklyn, and anyone else who calls in, 888-874-4888. I'd like to hear your input. We'll go to the talk now.
Spreading misinformation about the COVID-19 vaccines as one of several reasons they ran up the flagpole for doing it. That was on the Daily Skeptic, not Twitter. They subsequently resiled because they restored my account about 2 weeks later after I kicked up an almighty fuss in the media and in Parliament. But apart from that, spot on. freedom of speech should not mean freedom from consequences. I wonder if you'd include what happened to Salman Rushdie earlier this year as a consequence of free speech. But look, before we get into the substance of this, I just want to tell you how puzzled I was by one of the phrases. This House believes woke culture has gone too far. It was the conjunction of the words woke and culture, because what is woke culture? So Christian civilization has the King James Bible, the Cathedral of Notre Dame, the ceiling of the Sistine Chapel, Handel's Messiah. Modernism has Tchaikovsky, Picasso, Frank Lloyd Wright, Virginia Woolf. What art and culture has the woke cult given rise to? She-Hulk, attorney at law, Meghan Markle's podcast, the collected works of Owen Jones. The phrase woke culture is an oxymoron, a contradiction in terms, like social distancing and military intelligence. gone too far. Woke culture has yet to get beyond the embryo stage. It's a cultural desert, a gaping void. But perhaps I'm being too literal. I assume we're talking about the ideological movement, the intersectionality cult, the oppression Olympics, critical theories, as James Lindsay would put it, the grievance industrial complex, the great awakening, wokest day, what Orwell would have referred to as a smelly little orthodoxy. So first let me acknowledge, Alex, that the moral impulse underpinning this movement is laudable. Wanting to reduce prejudice and discrimination and improve outcomes for historically disadvantaged groups is an admirable goal. We can quibble about the inconsistent ways in which woke moral standards are applied. In fact, let's quibble. If you think slavery is abhorrent, why focus on the historical involvement of Britain and America in the slave trade and turn a blind eye to the enslavement of nigh on 2 million Uyghurs in contemporary China or the 200,000 people imprisoned in labor camps in North Korea? If you care about women's rights, why neglect the plight of women in Iran who risk being beaten to death by the religious police if they don't wear the hijab? If you care about social injustice, why obsess over the inequality of different identity groups and ignore class inequalities, surely a much more pervasive source of injustice? I often suspect the reason this doctrine has gained such purchase in private schools and elite universities is so people who, according to a traditional left-wing perspective, are extraordinarily privileged, can claim to be victims of oppression. I'm also puzzled by the stubborn refusal of the social justice warriors to acknowledge any of the good things about Britain, as well as itemizing the bad. Yes, the British Empire participated in the slave trade, but then so did every other empire, stretching back to ancient Greece and beyond. What makes the British Empire exceptional is that we were the first empire in history to pass a law abolishing slavery and commit blood and treasure to ending it across the world. Only a fool would say people of colour don't have to contend with prejudice and discrimination in contemporary Britain. But according to most international surveys, Britain is amongst the least racist countries in the world. A Swedish survey carried out in 2013 asked people in 80 different countries. Yes? Well, if
the British colonial system is not in the past, it's current, it's happening in my country.
Okay. I don't think of Great Britain and Northern Ireland as one country colonizing another. As I understand it, a majority of the people in Northern Ireland want to be part of the United Kingdom. Should that change, should there be a referendum, and a majority of the people in Northern Ireland vote to become part of the island of Ireland, then of course I'd accept that verdict. But as I understand it, at the moment, I mean, it's fairly close, but still a majority want to be part of the United Kingdom. So let me just go on. So the evidence that Britain is among the least racist countries in the world. So a group of Swedish researchers in 2013 asked people in 80 different countries whether they'd object to people of a different race moving in next door. This is a way of measuring how racist people are. And the percentage objecting in the UK was between 0 and 5%, whereas in other countries, in Jordan, for instance, more than 40% objected. In another recent survey measuring how racist different countries were, the country that was identified as the most racist in the world was Qatar. But no doubt, if the English footballers just go down on one knee and raise a fist, they'll magically make it go away. Okay, enough quibbling. Setting aside the bias and the double standards, there's nothing wrong with wanting to improve outcomes for historically disadvantaged groups. There's nothing wrong with the ideals you identified as the ideals of the woke movement. The objection to woke culture is not the end the woke are pursuing, but the means they use to pursue it. At the Free Speech Union, we get an average of 50 cries for help a week, and the vast majority are from people who find themselves on the sharp end of a Twitch fork mob. And the favored methods of the woke finder generals, as I'm sure all of you know, is not to argue, to persuade, to debate, but to smear, to ostracize, to publicly shame, to cancel. I'll give you an example. One of the first cases the Free Speech Union took up was here at Oxford. Professor of Modern History, Selena Todd, helped arrange a feminist conference at Exeter College, and it was to celebrate the 50th anniversary of a famous feminist conference organized at Exeter College 50 years ago. At the last minute, several of the speakers, and don't forget, she'd helped to organize this event, she'd helped raise money for it, she'd thrown herself into it. At the last minute, several of the speakers due to speak on the opening day said they couldn't appear on the same platform as her because of her gender-critical views. And so the organizers of the conference immediately disinvited her.
And there's more. You can go to garynall.com or prn.live. and hear what else he has to say. But listen to what his main message was this. You have to separate out the initial intent of a movement from the tools that they use to get to their end point. And if what you do when you want freedom of speech and you want to challenge the autocracies and the technocracies that control our lives, you should do so in a manner that is not the same is what you oppose. Violence does not gain the day against people who are violent. Reason does, and withdrawing your support from those that you consider unreasonable or selfish or self-absorbed or tyrannical or fascistic. And yet today we have a problem removing ourselves from anything that would save the environment. We have a lot of ideas, and everybody says, I'm for the environment. But then what are you doing? Are you willing to stop what you're purchasing, how much you're purchasing, and whether or not what you're purchasing was created and given to you because it was exploited in another country or with a group of people who had no power? So are you using your power and leveraging the power of the United States as one of the smaller populated countries in the world? We have under 5% of the population, but we're creating 30% more or less of all the pollution in the world. So what right do we have as a culture to condemn the rest of the world for what they're doing when, as the man said, most people just want to feed their families? When you have the type of environmental refugeeism around the world and the poverty, and we're doing nothing to ameliorate it, we're exploiting it. If you can't pay your debts, a whole group of people on Wall Street are happy about that because they're going to get you to pay 200-300% over the lifetime of that debt. In return, they profit. They profit off your misery. Why can't we ever do documentaries on all the corporations and the individuals and the governmental agencies that allow this to happen? But we won't. Why can't we tell the American public and the world public, if you want to save the environment, change what you're doing in your own lifestyle and your behavior? Stop buying all the plastic, stop eating the meat, stop. But we won't do that. So there's a massive hypocrisy and a cognitive spiritual disconnect between what we say we want and the means we go to achieve it, and trying to protect free speech by censoring others is not a way to go about it. Let's say hello now to David from Brooklyn. Hi, David, your turn.
Hey, Gary, thank you very much for all the time I spent for you and with you in Florida in the past. And what's on my mind today is a conclusion that I've reached, that the people sitting in the Congress, the senators, and the representatives do not represent the interests of the mass of people who live in the country. I mean, they're...
I would agree with that. David, I'm sorry, but we're out of time. But you've made a point, and it's a very important point. That's why we have to become consciously aware of the consequence of our votes and the choices we make. And if people simply took the time to look at the voting record of the people who are in power and then compare that to what they promised you when they were on the campaign trail, you'd see a great divergence between the effort they're going to make and the reality of what they did. Final call from Joe from Queens. Hi, Joe. Your comments.
Hi, Gary. I wonder if you'd mind if I told your audience three things that I admire and am indebted to you for.
If you make it quick.
Oh, Jesus. Maybe I should call back because it's not quick.
Okay, then I'm happy to take you on our first call tomorrow, all right?
Okay.
So tomorrow, when I go to calls, you'll be the first one, Joe. All right, thank you all for listening. And remember, one of the most powerful progressive commentators you're ever going to hear is tonight with Vandana Shiva. Wow, you talk about a person influencing the world. She has done so. She'll be my guest at 7 o'clock on PRN.live. Have a nice day, everyone.